This is Foolish Adventure, episode 21, The First Foolish Success. Welcome to another episode of Foolish Adventure. I'm Izzy Hyman, and I'm here with Tim Conley. Hey, Tim.
Hey, what's up, Izzy?
Hello. Okay, so today we're going to start with a voicemail from a listener. I'm going to go ahead and just hit play, okay? This is good news. We're going to play a really awesome voicemail here. Listen in.
Hi, Izzy. Hi, Tim. This is Shannon Rogers at RenaissanceWoodworker.com. I will try my best to remember to go leave a comment on the website, but I was driving home, and I just wanted to get something out to you guys to say thanks for everything you do. I just listened to the latest episode, and I'm really keen to learn more about these foolish guys. But I wanted to let you guys know that after listening to the episode, I guess a few weeks ago, when Izzy talked about launching his school or his membership, and he was really nervous, and then the whole day he kept getting little buzzes on his phone as new subscribers came through. I just went through that today, guys. I followed your advice. I just did it. Finally got my butt in gear and got my woodworking hand tool school launched. And basically, all day long, I've been getting emails and notifications of people signing up, and it is the coolest feeling you can ever experience. So thanks so much for everything you've done, for the information you've given me, and I'm looking forward to even more information that I can use to grow this business further. Thanks a lot, guys.
Congratulations, Shannon.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's like the first foolish success.
Isn't that a contradiction in terms? Not here.
Not here.
All right. Well, it sounds like Shannon had a very huge first day, which is awesome. I mean, anytime that you have signups coming in all day long like that, I know what that feeling's like. It was the most amazing thing. And he describes it as it's the most amazing thing. And it absolutely is the most amazing thing. And the cool thing is that not only is it, obviously it's representation of money. I mean, you're making money every time that thing buzzes, right?
So yeah, but the best part is exactly that it's the validation that people actually want what you're selling.
And not only that, but it's after you've put in a lot of work on the front end to get to this point. Like, you created this thing from nothing. You know, you build up the website, you build up the audience, you build up the information, you put together the course or whatever. You get to the point where you launch it, and then your phone buzzes all day long signaling it's money, but it's also a vote saying, I like you, I like what you're doing. I like you, I like what you're doing.
Yes.
You know, I'm on board with you.
Yeah, and it's a feeling that you cannot truly describe. You're going to have to experience this yourself. You know, when you launch your own product, you're going to be all nervous, like, oh my gosh, will anyone actually buy this? And then that first sale comes through and you're like, yes. And then another one comes in and another, and you're like, oh my gosh. And you start thinking, well, how far could this possibly go? And, you know, maybe I'll be a multimillionaire by noon, you know, but then reality kicks in and you're like, oh, but this was still awesome.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, and one thing that I really like about this is that Shannon is clearly somebody who takes action and does it. He sees things to completion, which is not something that everybody does. You know, in fact, there's Tim, you and I were having a conversation recently about how it's unfortunate that there are so many people that have information and then don't act on it. But there's a percentage, I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's a small percentage, what, 5%, 10%, 20%, I don't know.
Of people who take action?
What percentage of people take action?
Okay, probably 20 or 30% may actually take action, but only a small percentage will complete the action.
Okay, so in other words, 20 or 30% will get started towards something, and only a small percentage will actually see it all the way to the end.
A very tiny percentage.
And so Shannon is among that group, which is a huge compliment to him. I mean, not only will this thing that he's doing, clearly it's already a success, but not only will it continue to be a success, but I would just go ahead and make a prediction that a lot of things he does over the next few years as he's rolling stuff out and maybe into the far future are going to be successful too, because he takes the information, he does something about it, and sees it all the way to the end.
Well, the biggest part where you're saying, yeah, he'll have these future successes, but the reason he will is because when something actually comes along that knocks him back a bit, he won't quit. Because finishing the action, you know, getting to completion is the part that actually makes you money. A friend of mine, Joe Polish, I mention him over and over again. He's got a saying where he says, you know, five undone things equals no money, but one completed thing, one done thing equals money. So what Shannon has done is he has completed a thing and he got rewarded for it. But a lot of people will get an audience built up. They'll have this site. They'll have all this awesome content and then never sell anything.
So it was kind of funny because you know how we made that video of our launch when we launched Foolish Adventure?
Right.
Remember that little video on YouTube? Well, you know, I posted on YouTube and it's been watched, I don't know, maybe 100 times or something like that. But it recently got a comment. I think it was the first comment or the second comment that this video got. And the comment was something like, I've been parts of lots of launches and they've never looked like this. And the question in the comment, it said something like, has anybody else ever had this type of a launch where they had like people signing up and all this kind of energy and excitement and stuff? And the funny thing is that to me, I mean, that was a fun launch. That was exciting, but that's nothing compared to what's out there. I mean,
right. There
are people doing much bigger launches. So Tim, what do you think are some of the things that contribute? I don't even know who that person is. They just said, you know, I work with clients and we've done several launches together. It sounds like maybe he does consulting or something like that. And we've done several launches and we've never had something just happen like this in the first day. What are things that they're likely not doing? Knowing nothing. I mean, we don't know anything, but what are some of the common mistakes?
They didn't get product launch formula. Jeff Walker, you know, the dude knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And there's one of the things that when you're creating a launch is you actually have to find people. So if they didn't spend any time looking for a market to connect with, then of course their launch won't be spectacular because they're going to, you know, maybe, you know, a very small house list and they didn't put any effort into working with this market, where in our case, you had already spent years with your Izzy Video members and with the paper clipping members, so that when we just told them about this, there was a flood of people, and we sent out some informal requests from our friends and asked them to email for us and tweet about us, and then all that just drove a ton of traffic in that first day.
See, I think that's one thing too. Is I think I could imagine somebody who has a fizzled launch. I could imagine that they didn't turn it into enough of an event, and then advertise it, and then have people waiting for it. That was one thing that we did, is that we had people waiting for it. We were literally getting emails from people that were saying things like, when are you going to launch? You've been teasing about this. I can't wait to hear what you have to say, you know. And so you have people waiting for it. And then you say, okay, tomorrow we're blowing the doors off this thing. We're going to launch it to the world, you know, and try to have as much stuff happen in one day as possible.
Yeah, building that anticipation is really important. But people can't be and will not anticipate anything if they don't actually care.
Right.
And that's another thing that I've seen with product some product launches, where the people being marketed to, they may be like the perfect
prospect. Yeah.
But you didn't give them a reason to care.
Uh-huh.
And if you leave that out, then no matter what you do, well, it's going to fizzle. You're only going to connect with just a few of your prospects and not, you know, the larger audience.
Yeah, so that building that anticipation is big. And you're right, it's got to be something that I guess maybe I'm trying to think, maybe the word resonates with them, or something that really that they identify with or that they want.
Right.
So that's really interesting that somebody would go through all the trouble of launching something that they didn't know for sure their audience wanted. Like maybe they were asking for it like crazy, right?
Maybe. But most businesses start by someone wanting to do their own thing without ever finding out if there was a market for it.
Yeah. This takes us into areas we don't really want to get into with the whole market research.
Right. But, you know, like we've talked about 37 signals and how they say, you know, you should be you should build a product for yourself. You know, if it's something that you would want, then obviously there would be more people out there who would want the same thing.
Theoretically true.
And yeah, it is theoretically true because there are
more than one person that wants a certain thing.
We're getting close to 7 billion people on this planet. So
yeah,
odds are, you know, if you're just one in a million, there are probably a few hundred thousand or a couple million people just like you. And so, so yes, you could probably get away with that to a certain extent, but in some cases, people will say, I think the market needs this. And then therefore they make a product and then they put it out there and then no one wants it. They may need it, but they don't want it.
So I have recently been trying to figure out what my next product was going to be. Now that I've launched my Advanced Final Cut Express course, which it was awesome. It was a great launch. I was very, very happy. It was my first big launch, like my own personal big launch. It went over really well. But the thing is that I started thinking immediately about, okay, what's going to be the next big thing that I launch? And I did a bunch of research and found out that there was a certain segment. I'm not going to go through the details of it because it's sort of a hidden little segment that I could really scratch an itch that's out there, I think. But it's not something that people have been emailing me and asking me for. So anyway, this is something I started working on pretty heavily, put a lot of time into this new project. And then meanwhile, every day, people are asking me for this other thing. Like I'm literally getting emails every single day going, hey, that advanced course was so awesome. When are you going to do something about blah? And you know what I've done is I'm listening to these emails. I mean, to me, this is like, okay, my customers are telling me what they want to buy next. So I'm putting everything else on hold. This other thing that I've already put a lot of time and effort into, I'm putting it on hold because nobody's asking me for that. It's just something I think that they'll want, but I don't know for sure. Nobody's asking for it. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So now I put that on hold. And now I'm going over to this other thing that people are literally emailing me about on a daily basis. And I know, I don't know, I shouldn't say I know, but I'm pretty confident that when I launch this thing, it'll be pretty successful because so many people have already been emailing me about it.
Yeah, and that is most likely true. And I want to give a little bit of nuance to what you were just saying.
Okay.
So you're listening to your audience and they're telling you, actually your customers.
Yeah, they're people who have already bought.
Which that's a difference.
Okay.
You know, if you're listening to people who have never spent money with you, may or may not be telling you the truth. Not in that they're technically lying to you, but a lot of people just don't know what they really want.
What they're willing to pay for.
Right. So these are actually customers.
Yeah.
So you're listening to your customers. That makes sense. My customer wants X. They've already shown that they will buy from me. So if I make this thing that they're asking for, odds are they're going to buy it. At least a certain segment of your customer base will.
I just have a rule of thumb. I have no scientific evidence to back this up at all, Tim. But if I just figure in my mind that for every one person that goes through the trouble of emailing me and asking me for something, I think there's probably at least another 10 people that are thinking and wanting the same thing, but they just haven't gone through the trouble of emailing.
Right.
Like I'm not the type of person that when I want something from a specific person who runs a website, I don't usually email them and say, hey, I really liked your product. Blah. When are you going to make a blah? You know, I'll be willing to buy that too. The number of times I've sent that email to somebody in my life is pretty small, you know, but I'm getting those emails from my customers. And so I'm going, you know what, and it was the way it was before when I launched my Advanced Final Cut Express course, I was getting emails from people that were saying things like, hey, when's your Advanced Final Cut Express course come out? I don't even know what the price is going to be, but I'm telling you right now, I'm going to buy it. Based on the free one, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy it. And so I got like 10 people before I launched my course that told me in email that they were going to buy it. And I hadn't even told what the price was going to be yet. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, if 10 people say they'll buy it, I bet there's 50 people that'll buy it. And it turned out there was hundreds.
Yeah, and that should be the same thing that happens in this particular case. Then the other is, you were mentioning there's this other market that you don't really know if there's going to be a buyer in it, but you're doing market research. So in that particular case, you could actually treat it as if you're launching a completely brand new business, because the people who are going to buy it are going to be people who don't know anything about Izzy Video. So because you might have some in your customer base that will buy this also. But where your main thing would be is to tap into that market research and start getting customers from the search engines that you've been looking into.
Yeah.
You know, you would want those people showing up. And so they're not going to really know anything about Izzy Video. So you have to treat it as if you're building a brand new business.
And I kind of am doing that. I got a separate domain for it and all that. So I was planning on having it being its own little separate site that's just all about this one topic. It's related, but not exactly the same thing that I'm doing, you know, already with Izzy Video. So we'll see. I don't know. If I finish that one, which I don't know. I mean, it may be the kind of thing where I just table it and don't finish it, but I think I will. I think it's going to be something that I come back to after I finish this other course that people are asking me for.
Right.
So that's what I'm working on right now, Tim. Isn't it funny how we can have nothing on the agenda at all except just play a voicemail and then just turn it into a whole show? Isn't this crazy? Like, we play a voicemail. That's the only thing we knew for sure.
After all these episodes that we've done,
you're not surprised
at all.
I'm
not surprised at all. We just go off on tangents in those anyways when we plan stuff. So, you know, why plan at all?
Okay, so I actually did. I jotted down a couple of things I was hoping that we might be able to talk about in this
show.
Okay,
awesome.
So just kind of follow my lead.
At least one of us is planning.
Follow my lead. Here we go. Okay, so one of the things that I've been doing, just out of curiosity, is I wanted to see the websites and the emails of the folks in our audience. I wanted to see what they're doing already so that we would have specific things that we could talk about. Now, I am intentionally not going to bring up any one specific website or company or person because I'm not pointing my finger at one specific person. But I wrote down just a few different ideas that I thought I could mention. And then, Tim, you can help me elaborate on them to kind of flesh them out.
Okay.
All right. And these are tips. These are just random general tips that I think will benefit anybody that already has a website or that's already sending out emails.
All right.
Okay. So let's talk about emails first.
Okay.
The one of the things that I noticed, I received an email. It was a newsletter that was clearly going out to a list of newsletter subscribers. And I was on that list. And the email started out with something like, "Hey, everybody." Okay. So it started with, "Hey, everybody, blah, 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 blah." Okay. Now, Tim, we talked about this, the "Hey, everybody" thing. You want to cover it?
Okay. If I prefer having stuff where it's speaking directly to one person. Doing the "Hey, everybody" is not definitely not my typical approach, but if it's done right, it provides social proof. So there can be a reason to do the "Hey, everybody," if you need to show social proof that there are actually more than three people and your mom reading your email, right?
But "Hey, everybody" could be three people.
Yes, it could be.
Yeah.
But you have to do a few other things to provide more social proof to show that there are a lot of people actually reading it. So that way, it solidifies in other people's minds that they've made the right choice. So there's that way of doing the "Hey, everybody," but most people don't do it that way. What they're doing is they're just being lazy and thinking, "Oh, I'm sending this out to my three people, and so I'm going to say, 'Hey, everybody,'" as opposed to actually targeting what their audience. We've talked about it before, called an avatar, where you think about who your market is and you take those personalities, the demographics that make up your audience, and kind of make it into a composite person. And then you write to that person. That way, every email, every communication you ever have with your audience comes across very personal. And people connect tightly with that. It really resonates with them.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because even though I know that you can put in an email to have somebody's name automatically inserted into it, it still sort of gets me every single time I receive an email that starts off with, "Hi, Izzy." It still kind of gets me every time. Like, it gets my attention. You know what? And it shows up in Gmail. There's the subject of the, the subject of the email, the title or whatever you want to call it. And then right after that's the little blurb that shows just the little first part of the email. And every time it starts off with, "Hi, Izzy. Hey, yesterday I told you I was going to blah, blah, blah." Right?
Right.
And whenever I get that, it always kind of, there's always that split second that where I think, are they writing directly to me? Every time, even though I know, and even though I also insert people's first names sometimes in my emails, even though I know about this and I know how easy it is to do it, it still gets me. It gets my attention. If it gets my attention, it increases the likelihood that I open the email. And if it increases the likelihood I open the email, it increases the likelihood I read it. And if I read it, then I might go to the website or take some sort of action. Or something.
Yeah. One thing you should never do with your email is have it start off with, "This email is being sent to you because you have subscribed to this thing at some other point in the past."
I see that from company emails.
Yes.
Yes. You are receiving this email because you have opted into being on this list. If you'd like to unsubscribe,
Unsubscribe. That's the first thing I do.
Well, since you mention it.
Because obviously this is not being sent to me. Right?
Right. Not being sent to me specifically.
Right. So it automatically
alienates me.
Right at the beginning. Even because what they're worried about is that they're scared somebody's going to say, I'm spamming you. And so they put that up front. And if you communicate properly with your audience, or your market, if you're not building an audience like we are, if you communicate properly with your market, they're not going to treat you as a spammer. When an email pops in that they don't ever remember that they opted in for, well, then obviously you didn't connect with them. And you didn't follow up with them and things like that, so you're going to get spam complaints from doing that kind of thing. So when you start off with that, "Hey, we're sending you this because you asked for it," when you start off with something like that as opposed to, you know, "Hi, Tim," then you're automatically telling them that we're not trying to connect with you.
Here's a good way to open an email. "Hi, Tim. Hi, Tim. Let's see. How would I do this? Let's see.
Here's that inflatable doll you..."
I was going to say, "Hi, Tim. Attached is the email course I promised you," or something like that. Or "Here's the link to the blah, blah, blah I promised you." I like to use the word "you" in the emails because it seems very specific. It's writing directly to them. I love to use the word "you." You know, and frankly, when I'm writing emails, and even now when I'm talking into the microphone, and when we do our shows, I'm not just picturing an avatar. I actually picture specific people. Like, I know there are a few people in the audience that I've either met in person or talked to in real life, or I've even told them, some of them, "Hey, when I'm talking in the microphone, a lot of times I'm talking directly to you. So please listen to the shows so I know you're hearing me." You know, so it's, you know, I've got specific people I'm talking to, and that really helps me make it more personal. Like, I could give very personal recommendations, very specific, concrete stuff. I'm not speaking just generally.
Okay.
All right. So I think we got that one.
Yeah. I think we've covered email.
Here's another. Well, we haven't covered email. No. We got a lot. Oh, no. Yeah. We got a lot we can talk about in future episodes about writing emails and stuff like that, but we won't do that right now.
Yeah. Going into copywriting and things like that.
Yeah. We won't do that right now. So, another thing I've noticed is that I've gone to websites where there's a lot of, there's a couple things, but let's talk about this first one, where there's a lot of no action. There's a lot of, like, no calls to action. So when I say there's a lot of no calls to action, what I mean is let me clarify. Let me clarify here for you, Tim. I have a very special way of communicating. That I don't have no idea why I talk like that.
Okay, Yoda.
understand so, me, you will.
there's
no calls to action.
Right. Okay. That could be that they don't have anything to sell.
Except in the case that I'm thinking of right now, there is something to sell.
Okay, so they have something to sell, and they are scared.
Scared or timid or don't want to be direct?
Well, which is because they're afraid that something bad's going to happen. That they're going to either alienate their market, which, well, you don't have a market if they don't buy anything. So you're afraid that you're going to alienate someone. You're afraid that you're going to make someone mad. You may be afraid of getting returns. You might be afraid somebody's going to steal your stuff. There's all these things that people are afraid of that gets in the way of actually taking action. And so by doing it like, oh, this thing is really good, so, you know, people should be able to figure it out all on their own that they should buy it. Well, even if somebody wants it and they've come to your site and they're ready to buy, they still have to be convinced.
You have to almost say step by step what I need you to do as the visitor. You know, click here to go buy it.
Right. You have to tell people what to do. And a lot of people don't really understand this. When you go to a store, no one's telling you to buy. But stores are arranged to get you to buy something. You know, they put a ton of effort into merchandising and setting up displays, things like that. They arrange their whole stores based upon getting you to actually buy something when you're there. People don't consciously look at it that way. They walk into a store and when they buy something, they tell themselves they meant to buy something when they walked in. When you come to a website, you don't have that. That's not available. So you can't arrange the way people are going to move through there. You can try to funnel people to a particular direction. You can do that, but the internet, if you have multiple links, people are going to click them. So it's a lot harder to do. So you just tell people, you know, here's what I want you to do. And if they are actually, if you've shown the benefits of your product, they know what it's going to do for them, and it's something that they've got the money for, then they're going to buy it. But if you don't tell them to, then only a very tiny percentage will ever, you know, take action without being told to.
So if somebody has a sales page, they should be linking to that sales page, and you know, there definitely needs to be a sales page for a product, something that really describes, that answers the questions, that talks about the benefits, that overcomes objections. That sales page is about that specific product, right?
Right.
So when people are directing someone to the sales page, there should be a very specific link that says something like, click here to learn more, or click here to learn more about that product, or click here to sign up for the product, or click here, something about clicking here. Now, clicking here is not a great SEO type of link. Like, you don't want necessarily to have click here's all over the place. But when it comes to directing someone to a sales page where you want them to take action to go visit that, I think something like click here or follow this link or something like that, something very direct. There was one that I saw the other day that was just really, it was sort of like a passive link. To get someone to go and actually sign up, it said something like, this course is now available. So it was like a description of the course, and it said, and it's now available. And the words, and it's now available, was the link to go buy it. Instead of buy now or sign up. Do you see what I'm saying,
right,
Tim? It was a real kind of, that could be strengthened big time, you know? So
right. Just
little things like that. I mean, I would encourage somebody listening in the audience to listen and to review their calls to action to make sure that on everything that they send out, there is a call to action. I've had to go through my emails, my email follow-up list and all that stuff, all the automated autoresponders, all that stuff. I've gone through, and as I learned about calls to action, I went through and added calls to action to everything that said things like, click here. I didn't want anybody to just, I mean, even if the call to action is just to go watch a video, the call to action is click here to go watch this video. You see? So that we're always telling them what to do next, and that's what steps them towards the next step in the progression towards becoming a customer or a member,
right,
or whatever. You know what else is interesting? I haven't done this yet, but I just thought of this. And that is, I buy a lot from Amazon.com because I have a Prime, a Prime member. So I get like free shipping, free 2-day shipping on everything.
Okay.
You know, on not everything, on some items, a lot of items. So I buy a lot from Amazon.com, and I've noticed that once you put a bunch of stuff in the cart and you click something that leads you towards the checkout, you get to a point before you've actually checked out where there is no way to go anywhere else on Amazon.com except for one little tiny link at the bottom somewhere that's something like return to shopping or something right. like that, really small. So I think it's the confirmation page, like here's your order, here's what we have for your order. And right. the next button that you're going to click is buy.
Yes.
So it funnels you down to where you can't do anything else. I mean, here's Amazon.com. They're a super, super successful company. And they're having me get to the point in my buying process where I can't do anything else except buy.
Or close
the window.
Right. And they test everything.
Like crazy.
So, right. So if you want to learn how to sell online in a catalog format, well, you're not going to beat Amazon. They put a lot of effort into making sure that when they're referencing other products that other people have purchased or things that you've visited just recently, they make sure that certain ones show up because they've been tracking your behavior, and it lets them know that odds are if we stick this in front of this person, it's going into the cart. So once it's in the cart, now we need to work on getting them to actually finish this transaction, because a lot of people abandon their carts. And some people, one thing I do is if somebody doesn't tell me what the price is, I automatically hit
add to cart
just so I can see what the price is. A lot of internet marketers do this. They're selling these info products and they have this huge sales page. And
you can't find the price anywhere.
Right, and you can't find the price anywhere. And, you know, it may be hidden or whatever. You know, I highlight the price. Like when we did the WordPress training launch, I highlighted the price. This is how much it is. I want you to know, you know, ahead of time. I even told the list ahead of time before we even offered it for sale how much it was going to be.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Instead of trying to hide things, because I don't have anything to hide.
Right.
So in Amazon, you know what your price is ahead of time. You go to buy it and everything's there. If you've got a sales page and you're hiding the price, well, then maybe it's not worth the price.
Right.
So that's the first thing I think of. So I scroll down till I can see the very first buy button or buy link, and I click on it. Just to see what the price is. And then I abandon the cart because I look at it and go, this thing wasn't actually worth that high price. And I abandon the cart frequently. And most people, when buying things online, will abandon the cart. I don't know the exact percentage, but I know in most cases, most people drop out of the sales process.
Yeah, so I like to, you know, once you start a online business, I think you start sort of seeing what's going on everywhere you go on the website. Like when I saw what was going on as I'm checking out of Amazon, I'm like, I know what they're doing here. They're taking away my other decisions. They're making it to where I have one decision to make, either buy now or leave this page. That's it. They're making it simple at this point for me. And the likelihood that I'm going to buy now is pretty high because, number one, I can't figure out where else to go. And the reason I was putting all this stuff in the cart and gotten to the confirmation page to begin with is because I was interested in buying. So, but I do think it's interesting how they do that. And incidentally, I have that set up on my website the same way. When somebody clicks to sign up to become a member, it takes them to a page that is just all about enter your information and sign up. It's not, there's nothing at that point. They can't click on maybe I'll watch a few more free videos. There's no link to go watch more free videos.
Right.
There's no link to go do anything else. It's just all about, at this point, if you've gotten to this point, you can sign up or you can not sign up. That's up to you. Same thing.
Yep.
I'm saying the same thing over and over again.
No,
but
that's right.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay. Well, just in case somebody wasn't listening to the first 10 minutes of that, maybe we can review it like that. All right, let's see. What else do we have here? Okay, so for one of the sales pages I was looking at had a lot of text, and it was all in paragraph form. It was like a long essay. There were no bullet points. There were no headings. There were no testimonials.
Yeah, a real sleeper, you know, no one's going to read it.
Yeah, and the reason why we can laugh, by the way, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but we're not talking about one specific page that anybody knows that who we're talking about there, even though I'm thinking of one in my mind. You know, yeah, there might be two or three people in the audience going, oh, I bet maybe it was mine. Oh, no. But it was just all text, no headlines, no subheadings, I should say, no bullet points, no testimonials, no graphics. It was just text, just a paragraph, an essay. I mean, it wasn't just one paragraph. It was multiple paragraphs. There wasn't even bolded text. There wasn't even highlighted text. It was just flat-out text in paragraph form. So, Tim, some pointers.
Just break it up. Make it visually interesting. You don't even have to be a great copywriter to do that. I'm not a great copywriter. I've worked with people, and when I really need awesome copy, I hire out. When I wrote the WordPress, the Foolish Guide to Creating a Website with WordPress, and I wrote that sales letter, and I did it really quickly. Didn't put a ton of time into it, but when I wrote it, I had already outlined like what my three main segments were going to be, and I even put in. Enter subhead here.
Oh yeah.
You know, in my draft, I put in this is where a subhead needs to go. And when I would write a paragraph, if I saw that it was getting too long, I would just break the paragraph apart, just so that you only had this small. There's tons of white space, and it's like, oh, there I haven't had any subheads for a while. Maybe I'll stick one in here, or I need to add some visual interest, so I'm going to add a bolded section here, and I'm going to throw in, I'm going to make it, red or something, and then put in bullet points and stuff like that. I just do them like, I look at it as an overall picture and say, okay, how can I break this up? What would make this more visually interesting? And then there's stuff you can go into with just plain copywriting where if you're going to highlight something, it's part of you telling the story. And there's a thing called the dual readership path. So
this is the first time I've ever heard about this. I can't wait. It sounds like a real Zen thing.
It's dual
readership path. Okay.
So when somebody's reading, they're going down, you've got a couple of different personality types. There's the kind that will skim first, and if it's interesting, they'll go back and read it. Then there's the other type that's going to just start reading from the top and go all the way to the bottom.
That's me, by the way. So does that surprise you at all?
No.
All right, back to you.
So what happens is what you want to do is tell a story with your subheads, with your headline and all your subheads, and anything you highlight and bold. They all tell a story, as if a really edited version of a story.
Made up of sentence fragments.
Yes, of sentence fragments, but you could read them straight down. It's really difficult to do.
Wow.
It's a very advanced topic, and it takes a long time, so I usually don't do it. I've done it before, but I usually don't because it just adds significant amount of time to the sales letter. And then you can read those all by itself and get the whole story for what this sales page is about. And that person who's a skimmer might just look at those subheads and all the bolded parts and some bullet points and then buy, because they don't really need to go back and read it because they already got the whole story. Then the other path is where you actually have your regular copy. That regular copy, if you read it all the way through, tells the story to get somebody to buy. So you can have both of those in one letter. All well-crafted sales letters, like stuff you get in the mail, a lot of them that you'll see on some older websites, because people are getting away from the long-form sales letter, you'll see that dual readership path.
That's cool. I never even knew about that, so it's kind of cool to hear about it.
Yeah, there's a lot we could go into when it comes to copywriting.
But just initially, I just wanted to say that I think it's a good idea to break it up and add some bullet points. And what about with testimonials? You know, somebody's launching their first product. They may not have testimonials yet to even include on there.
Well, there's a couple of schools of thought related to testimonials.
We're going
to
choose the 100% on above board authentic. Is that one of the schools of thought?
No, there's the scammer thing. I don't talk about those. It's
okay,
like,
okay.
You know,
yeah, I figured.
There are people who will make fake testimonials.
That don't seems like that. It'd be illegal.
It is illegal.
Okay, good.
So don't do it. Don't do initials. Nobody believes initials. As soon as you see someone initials for a person who left the testimonial,
like IA or K or whatever,
TS from Illinois, liar. That's the very first thing a person who reads that will think. You made up that testimonial.
Yeah.
If you can't put in the real name, then it's not a real testimonial.
Yep.
So don't do it.
I saw one once, just so you know. I saw one where the testimonial was from a spouse using their maiden name.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scammer. It's like, so you don't have a good product. So essentially the two schools of thought is you have your testimonials. You want to have as many as you possibly can, and you want them to have where a testimonial will address different issues like
well, how do you do it when you're new though and you don't have any?
Well, you don't in the two schools of thought is there's ones like, you know, skip the testimonials altogether.
That's what I did when I was new. Just skip them because I don't have any.
Well, but you can get do a pre-launch. You can get people to come in and beta test your product, and then in exchange for testimonials, you know, or ask for their testimonial afterwards.
Yeah,
you can get the nice guy testimonial, which is you get your friends to say nice things about you.
Right, but it's not specifically about the product necessarily.
Right.
It's just people that have good things to say about you as a person.
Right. So yeah. So you're a good guy. Those are not nearly as effective as, you know, I bought this product and it was awesome. It cured my cancer and it grew my hair back and, you know, all those sort of things. You want all these different testimonials to say the different things that this product can do. Frank Kern, a very well-known internet marketer, he got away from testimonials altogether. Even before the FCC came down on the use of testimonials, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, there was this big ordeal where a bunch of people were using fake testimonials and fake blog sites to say that they lost weight using the acai berry, or however you pronounce that, using these different diet products. A huge thing. So it was passed down that, you know, if you have a testimonial, it has to be one that's average, you know, that most of the people who buy your product have that result. And you know, a whole bunch of other things that were in there. Well, in internet marketing, if you're selling a product on how to make money online, well, maybe 3% will ever complete doing it. So if you had any testimonial at all.
Yeah, it would be something like, yeah, I bought the course, didn't really read it much, and so didn't have any results.
Yeah, you know, I bought it and I stuck it up on my bookshelf, and that would be an average testimonial, because that's what happens. It's unfortunate, you know. Lots of people out there already have great information sitting on their bookshelves, but they won't do anything with it. So Frank just said, I'm not even going to use any testimonials.
And he did that before all that stuff happened.
Before that happened, he just stopped using them.
Yeah, as a test?
I have no idea.
You don't know what his motives are, yeah.
He didn't really say why. He just said, I just didn't do it.
Huh.
And and it didn't hurt his sales at all because he had already spent all the time and effort into building a connection with his market. So they didn't care. They already believed that his anything he taught was going to be effective. So he took the effort of, I'll make one of the greatest products in internet marketing possible, and I will communicate that as best I possibly can in what I do and in everything, all my talks, whatever I do, all my communications are going to put across the idea that I know what I'm talking about, so therefore you should buy the product.
Yeah.
So there's that approach. I'm kind of in the middle of those. You know, I don't mind having a few testimonials. I don't go out of my way to have tons of testimonials. I just don't see the real need in it. And a lot of times you can test two different sales pages. They're exactly the same, except for one's got testimonials and the other one doesn't, and see what happens.
Yeah, so I did that test, actually, on my sales page for my Izzy Video membership. And one thing that I found, for whatever reason, I mean, it could have been other things too. Like, I don't know exactly why, but I get at least one testimonial probably almost every single day, and maybe more, where I just get an email that shows up that says something like, hey, love, oh, it just blew me away, this course, blah, 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 whatever. I get something that's positive. And what I've done is I've gotten in the habit where I just take that real quick and then label it in my Gmail. I use the Gmail service. I just label it as a testimonial, and then I can go back if I ever need them. I could just go back and do a quick scan based on that label. I just pull up everything that's labeled testimonials, and I could see all the emails. Well, I had collected something like 250 testimonials, some large number of testimonials, and I thought, I wonder what would happen if I just tacked on like 100 of them at the end of my sales page. So in other words, the whole sales page is over, and I just have a whole bunch of testimonials at the bottom. What do you think happened? You know, well, I'll tell you what happened because there's no way for you to know. And then also because my sales page doesn't have those on it anymore. And so we know based on that it actually drove my sales down. So it was a test. I did it for a week or two, something like that. But I just want to see what would happen if I ended my sales page with a lot of testimonials.
Okay. And the reason.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Tell me, wise one.
The reason you had this decrease in sales is that you took away from the call to action.
Okay.
So you put it at the end, and yeah, and you had a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to look at them all. And when I go all the way down, I forgot why I was even here. So that's why the sales would drop. If you would have taken, say, two testimonials, stuck it up near the beginning of the sales letter, two stuck in the middle, two stuck near the call to action, and then at the bottom of your sales page, another call to action, then and had you with a large batch of them, thrown in some calls to action in the middle of those, you probably could have saved some sales, because they wouldn't forget why they were there.
Yeah, that's good feedback. Although I have to say that it's been a while since I've tried that. I tested it maybe a year or two ago. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
But I'd just gotten really excited. It was one of these things where I read in a book, make sure you include a lot of testimonials on your landing page, right? Or on your sales page. And I'd read that in a book. I think it was I don't remember which book. I think it was Landing Page Optimization. I think it was in that one. And then I thought, you know, I'm just going to go crazy. I said, I don't know how many testimonials are good, so I'll just put a whole bunch on there. And obviously that wasn't very good.
Well,
so.
You can have a lot. I've seen some high converting websites that have tons of testimonials, but you have to do it in such a way that it doesn't take away from the sales process.
Nice.
That it actually contributes to the sales process. So you have to be careful with using them, which is what anything that you do on a website, you have to be careful what you're using it for and you need to know why you're using it. So, and that what you were saying about, you read a book, right? And so you just took some action. And we were talking before we did this recording. You said, "Hey, let's talk about keywords." And I said, oh, "Yeah, that's a, we could." Very non-committal from me. and then I explained why was that incomplete knowledge on certain topics could be more dangerous to your business than not knowing at all, because you could start getting information, but you would be using it incorrectly. And there's there's only one type of information worse than bad information, and that is not knowing that it's bad information.
Ooh, nice. That's good. That's deep, actually. Let's just sit and ruminate on that for a minute here.
Okay, that's enough.
That's enough of that. Right. All right. Well, actually, how long have we been going? 50 minutes?
Wow.
Oh, we better stop.
We better get off of this.
We better stop. How's that for a smooth ending? Oh, look what time it is. We got to get out of here.
Crap, we went on for a long time.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. Well, okay. I actually had a few other things here that I thought maybe we'd talk about, but we'll just put that off for a future show. Thanks everybody for listening.
And if you're still there.
If you're still there, I definitely say thank you for listening and for all the kind words. I mean, it's awesome. Tim and I are doing this and we're having a great time doing it. It's a lot of fun and we're always coming up with new things to talk about, clearly. And it seems like we'll never run out of things, clearly. But so thanks for sticking with us and help us spread the word if you would. If you're not embarrassed to forward this on to somebody else, please feel free to do it. And that's it for this episode, I think. I'll just go ahead and say goodbye and you could say,
enjoy your foolish adventure.
Thanks for listening to Foolish Adventure. If you found this information helpful and want more like it, please visit foolishadventure.com. Do you have specific questions you'd like us to answer? Leave a comment on the website. Who knows? Maybe we'll create a whole show to answer it. Also, we have a voicemail line where you can ask questions. The number is 480-331-4695.